Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Transformation Cafe with your host, Robin Misevich. Transformation Cafe, a weekly half hour of light, topical conversation about health, wellness, happiness, personal growth, spirituality, and other insights. We're glad you're here. Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul. Now, let's get started and introduce our diners for tonight's show.
Well, hey, everyone. I want to welcome you to the Transformation Cafe. I'm your host, Robin Misevich, and we are back in the Cafe Book Club. We are in Chapter 8 of Getting the Love That You Really Want by Harville Hendricks and his wife, Helen Hunt. And my wonderful co-host for this evening is going to be Miss Michelle. How are you tonight?
I'm wonderful. I'm looking forward to many surprises.
I think we're going to have a really wonderful conversation. We both popped in the line and said, I love this chapter. I think it's going to be a fun conversation. So the chapter in our book, so one thing that, you know, Miss Amy won't be able to be with us tonight, but she's got the more updated version. We have the we both have the first edition of this book, and this book's been around for 30 years, so there's a few editions out there. But in Chapter 8 of our edition, it's called Creating a Zone of Safety, and I really love that. And we like Zone of Safety. Of course, it's going to – Harville's really good at making you go, ooh, what's that? You know how that goes. And we always have the wonder – I always love books that have quotes that start out chapters, and it says – perfect love means to love the one through whom one becomes unhappy. Boy, ain't that
say,
true.
Say it again. What does it say?
It said, perhaps love means to love the one through whom one becomes unhappy.
Oh.
And that was a Kierkegaard quoted that one. And, you know, I think there's something really to that. I've been married for over 30 years. And, you know, not that there would be a love-hate relationship, but there's definitely love in all its different facets, and even thinking, I don't know why, but I'm thinking agape love too, when it comes to just the different ways that we love and really being challenged in those ways of being able to say, how about now? Are you going to love me now?
Right.
You do something like that, you go, how about now? And you kind of go, okay, let me think about that.
Let me go deeper
with that one. Okay. But this book, this chapter is really about, it was surprising, but it's about making lists. And it really starts out with Harville talking about.
No, it's not about making lists.
Yeah, it is. It's about making lists. Okay, what do you
think it's not about?
Go ahead. What do you think it's about? I mean, you can miss complaining a lot. Don't agree with me, whatever you do. Okay.
I think it's about asking for you what you want and the other person giving gifts.
And that's true, too. That's all true, too. That's a part
okay,
of the
so
whole
it's all.
And people are like, what are we talking about? We're all over the map here.
Let's say it starts with a list.
It starts with a list and it ends in bliss. See? That's I know, right? You're like, okay, we're done. We don't need to do the next 26 minutes. We're done. Okay, that was good. But Harville talks about how when you're in therapy or when you're having a conflict with a person, you know, just to automatically act as if you're going to make this love letter or this new way of communicating with each other, your old reptilian brain, the old brain kind of goes, wait a minute, there's something going on with this. I don't know if this is such a great idea. When in actuality, it actually started with another therapist that he had been with, and he wound up learning about this and having it be an exercise that really helps people to, it's kind of like act as if, but it really what it's doing is it's got all these, when we get into it, I really want to talk about why it works because, boy, there's all kinds of really fascinating things that go along with this. And that's one thing I love about Harville's work. Is he really explains it on a psychological level so you can see all the different things that happen and what even happens on a behavioral level, like when you were a kid, what happened to you, you know, in making it work or not work, which I really love. But,
in context. So the last time we did the show, we were talking about making a commitment. So this is the next step after making a commitment is to create a zone of safety. Mm-hmm. So the next step is to help each other, to help the couple to become allies instead of enemies. Because how are you going to work on your marriage if that person that you're with is your enemy? So this is a way to allow you to align with each other, to become more friends and helpmates as you go deeper with the more difficult problems that need to be addressed.
Yeah.
So this chapter is all about how to bridge the gap.
Right, right. And making it to where you actually feel like you are, really being there to support one another. And I love how they talked about that. Are you really being something where you're a friend and a helpmate? I love being, I think everybody should be a helpmate. That's a good thing. But part of I think being a helpmate is being able to ask for what you want. And that's really kind of what this chapter is about, too, is being able to make these lists about, letting people know what your needs are. And, boy, there's all kinds of reasons why we do and don't do that, too.
Well, what he does is he asks the couples to set up a structure that artificially looks like how it did when they were, first dating or like in kind of the honeymoon period.
Right.
And so making a list of what caring behaviors that person did for you when you were in that honeymoon stage and asking for them to start doing those again so that you guys can kind of reconnect.
So the exercise came from a psychologist named Richard Stewart, and he presented the exercise for couples that would help them to feel more loving with each other. And he called them caring days, and having it being something where you would you basically make a list of different things that you would like from your significant other. And I really think we should do this for friends and all kinds of people. But, doing it with another person about the things that you would like to have them do for you. And the one thing I really love about that, and I know that Michelle shared it before, is that there's no you do one for me, I do one for you. There's no tit for tat kind of thing. If they're all gifts that you give one another, with no sense of, anything, the other person having to do or not do anything for you. You're doing it just for the fact you're making it a gift.
Yeah, and you do it every day regardless of how you're feeling about your partner.
Yeah, and yourself, because part of this gets into the fact that there are people, as we go later into the chapter, about some people who just do all kinds of really interesting things to have trying to sabotage the exercise, which I think is really interesting. We'll talk about that a little bit later.
Right.
But, self-sabotage. It's really, really interesting. Yeah. So, treating each other in ways that were happier times and, being really genuine. So one of the clients that he asked to go ahead and do this exercise, I thought it was really interesting because the husband went out and one of the things on the wife's list was that she would like him to get her some flowers. So he begrudgingly goes and gets the flowers, and he realizes she likes daisies, so he gets the daisies. And then he said, well, I'm going through this, and I've spent a lot of money for this counseling, so I might as well just do it. I love all the
might as well do
all
it
the
up.
Things they do in their head. Yeah, you're like, oh, okay, well, I'm spending all this money. I'm just going to do it, right? He wrote her a card and everything because he's like, if I wouldn't do it, I'm going to do it, gosh darn it. And, he wrote a card saying that he loved her. And when he gave her the card and the flowers, she ended up getting all choked up because it had been so long since she'd heard or had any kind of a message from him that saying that he loved her. It really it touched her, and then it touched him.
The thing I found the most interesting was he said as he gave her the gift and the card, he really did feel I love you.
Mm-hmm.
So it changed him. It didn't just change her. It changed him.
Mm-hmm.
Before
mm-hmm.
she even responded, he already felt the feelings mm-hmm. of I love you. Isn't that amazing?
That's amazing. And just thinking, how he had all these stories in his head about he was doing it, kind of going through the motions. But when he actually engaged with her with it, he was automatically feeling that. That's so cool.
That's so wonderful.
Yeah, yeah, it's so amazing that, and that's one thing that Harville talks about. He goes, all these things that happen with people, you know, it's like, why does it work? And so he really gets into a whole bunch of things about, you know, being able to really get into the culture of creativity that he says that marriage is a culture of creativity that's imposed on a biology. And just kind of back up for a second. And I thought that was very interesting because at the beginning of the chapter, he talks about how, you know, a doctor can come in and heal you of something, and then the body will just take over to the way it used to do it before it had any kind of problem. But when it comes to our emotional needs and with different relationships and stuff that we have, so much of it's being altered by our sense of reality and our perceptions of things. It's not like, well, you know, once it gets changed, it's kind of like I come out of my shell and I'm never going back in again. You know, that's that kind of a thing, I think, when it comes to mindsets and having things moving from one thing to another. So this exercise is really good because I think it's really wonderful. It says, you know, do things like you used to do or things that you would want to have done, and it's not like going back to the past. It's being in the present moment and interacting with that person. And then I think that's really powerful, too, because it's not about how it was in the past. It's like, how is it right now for you, for one another, and how we are together. I think that's really an interesting aspect of it. So he was talking about some of the things of, you know, why it does work. Because it's one of these things that's just so simple, but yet can be very effective. And what happens is that once we start doing these exercises, and again, it's like, we're supposed to do like 2 or 3 a day, Michelle? I can't remember that part.
That's what it said, and it seemed a little excessive to me.
Yeah, but, yeah. That seems like a lot, especially if you're doing it every day with each other.
But who knows what was on the list? Maybe the list is, you know, look me in my eyes and smile, you know?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
You know,
who knows what's really on the list?
That's true. That's true. Like, I'm going to do that every time I look at you.
I mean, I could do that 2 and 3 times a day.
I'm
going to
stare
you
down,
I mean?
And smile at you. Okay, yeah, okay. I don't think that's what we're talking about. But anyway.
Well, okay.
But he said this positive behavior that once the old brain starts to see that these behaviors are actually being positive experiences, that it really kind of overlays the painful problem, you know, injuries that we've had in the past. It overlays into these positive interactions with one another. So it's kind of like that whole idea of like, when, for whatever reason, I'm thinking, you know, when somebody basically, you know, you get a criticism by somebody, and then it takes like 5 positive interactions to basically negate that negative one. So it's all these positive interactions that are helping to just really overlay anything that had been in the past. And when we do that, he says that that our old brain starts to feel safe and starts to feel like, oh, you do care for me. I am getting cared for. I'm going to die. Because remember last show he was talking about when we just kind of spiral out when we're not getting what we want and what we really want to have out of life. And when we're not getting those things, we automatically go into this, you know, fear of death, that things are going to end and we're not going to ever feel like we've gotten those things, you know, healed within us. So I think that's something that's really, really cool. So what was another one of the why it doesn't work that you thought was really interesting, Michelle?
Why it does work, you mean?
Yeah, why it doesn't work.
Because it's no more of the read my mind syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
So you're making the list, you're asking for what you want. It's taking us out of that old brain, you know, when we were a baby and how we would cry, someone would come and attend to all of our needs and we didn't have to express exactly what the need was. They would figure it out. And so it takes us out of that old way of operating. I think it probably puts us into a different part of our brain.
Mm-hmm. I think so too. Yeah.
And so no more of that where if someone fails to satisfy, you know, your secret desire, that you see them as the old brain would see them as deliberately depriving them of pleasure. So it takes
mm-hmm.
you out of that old brain. It puts you into the prefrontal cortex, the neocortical mind, and brings you into a more powerful, more conscious way of creating what you want.
That's very cool. Well, for me, when I was looking at that, too, and when it said, you know, that your partner can't read your mind, what it really, to me, that basically takes expectation off off the shelf. Because, like, we're not, there's no expectations of them doing or not doing something. You know what I mean? It's just basically, you're just taking all that out about what they should or shouldn't do.
Yeah, and applying meaning where meaning doesn't belong. Like, if they could read your mind, it means something. Like, it doesn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
They're
you
a
just,
good
guesser. You just, it's a story. Yeah, it's a great story, and you can tell yourself that all day long, but that doesn't mean it's true. Yeah, it's just a story. It's like the old kind of thing. Like, it's information. I don't necessarily have to do anything with that. So, one of the other things that you talked about was no tit for tat and having that whole relational mindset of, like, you do this for me, so I do that for you. It's just kind of like that golden rule kind of a thing of, like, treating others the way we want to be treated. Well, that doesn't necessarily work when it comes for things like that. Because one of the stories was the wife, the husband was having a 40th birthday party, and she got all the stuff he liked, and his food, and had his music, and all the sons of stuff. And a couple months later, while they were, in therapy talking about it, the husband was just really upset. He goes, "That's what you would have liked. That's not who I am." So, you know, putting this whole party together, yeah, that was great, and you know, it was, but it's just like, I hated it because it doesn't. That's not me. I would have wanted a quiet dinner with maybe a couple gifts and spending time with the family. That would have been, you know, really how I wanted to spend my birthday. So it's really interesting how, you know, and then that made me think of the one book that we talked about on the show before, is The
love
Seven Languages of Love. Yeah, the love language is about, you know, what we think, and that's the reason why it goes back to that list, making this positive list of things, you know, we'd want that person to do for us. It really helps us to kind of know each other again. You know, it's always these assumptions of, like, the aspects of somebody knowing somebody, and it's like I was talking to a friend of mine. He was going to go visit his family, and he hadn't seen him for a couple of years. And I was talking about, well, you know, they know you as who you were 2 years ago. That doesn't mean you're there now. And he kind of looked at me like, oh, yeah, that's true, huh? So when you walk in the door, they think you're, you know, that 19, you know, 2016 version, not 2018 version. So that's something that to kind of take into consideration for those kinds of things. It's like, who am I now, and, you know, how are we interacting with each other? I think that's really, along with that too, is, you know, it says regardless of behaviors of the other, you know, there's no payoff. It's basically just I'm gifting something just because I'm gifting something, and not having, you know, whether however you react or however I react, it's something that I'm seeking to do in a positive way, just to gift that to you. I think that's such an interesting and what if we all walked around just seeking to be, you know, providing gifts for one another? And I mean, like you said, it could be smiling at someone. It could be holding a door for someone. It could be a kind word at the grocery store. All these simple things that we can do every day as we interact with people. And it can be, you know, really a profound thing when you actually look at somebody instead of looking past them. I just think that's
right.
And
when you take it out, when you take it out of keeping score, I think it frees you. It frees you just to give.
Yeah.
Just to give because you can give.
Yeah, I love to do that with people. Like, you know, I see something that I know somebody would like. I get it, and I just give it to them. And they're like, why are you doing that? And it's like, because you like it.
Yeah, you do that.
It would make you happy. And then they'll be like, well, what should I do for you? Nothing. The fact that you liked it and you enjoyed it and you're gonna have fun with it, that's all that matters to me. And even with that is, like, even if you gave it to someone and it wasn't necessarily the response that you thought they were going to do, that doesn't matter either.
True.
Once you give something to somebody, it's not yours anymore, for a sense of, you know, and really in some ways it's not, it's never really been yours, because once you bought it and wanted to give it to them, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's an expectation.
Right, and to keep your focus on the joy of you giving and not on the requirement of how they behave in receiving.
Right, right. So it's just really fascinating why all this works, and it's really kind of, it's very deep. It's not even kind of deep. It is deep. I think it's very deep the way it really shows the different aspects of different stuff. So,
and go ahead.
Go. I was just looking at the last thing within that they were talking about, that, you know, when it's really working to give target behaviors, because it's a matter of choice what we're doing, you know, when it comes to, like, how I feel or what I'm doing and why I'm doing what I'm doing. So it's targeting those things we're wanting for positive behavior. Because the whole idea of this exercise is to really get you out of negative or behaviors that, don't serve you as much as others could. And I think that's really, really an important thing on there. And it really helps to heal wounds, which is, gosh, the best thing ever. One of the stories that I thought was really sweet was a husband and wife that one of the things he had on his list was he wanted his wife to turn down the covers on the bed every night. And wound up being something where his mom died when he was pretty young, and his older sister wound up, right after she got married, taking care of him, and that's something that his sister did for him every day. She would pull down the covers on the bed and put a beverage by his nightstand and things like that. So just a, like, you know, I'm helping to care for you and I love you, and that's a way of me showing my love. And it really helped him to heal. It was something that he really, really got a lot of value out of, and it made him think of his sister in a very caring way that helped him to, you know, kind of come full circle.
Gave him a feeling of security. And if you could do something simple like that and give somebody a feeling of security, what a gift.
That's a big gift. That's a very, very big gift. So just really cool stuff. So when they started doing all these exercises, you know, after a while people were like, okay, this is getting kind of old and we're kind of running out of things on our list. So Harville wound up modifying it, the exercise a little bit, and he added in the surprise list, which I think is really fun. It was unpredictable.
What he said is that people weren't getting the same amount of pleasure anymore. People were doing the same kinds of things, but they weren't receiving the pleasure from it.
Right. And there was a fascinating study that they did with that, because they wound up having a kind of just by chance. They were doing an experiment with rats, and there was a malfunction with the feeder on one of the rat traps. And so these rats automatically were getting fed, and they weren't necessarily doing the action that they needed to go ahead and get their food. And so they were just like, woo-hoo, we're getting fed the food, and we didn't even have to do nothing. This is amazing. And so once they fixed it, they wound up finding out that because of that malfunction, it actually was a thing on behavioral particulars that they didn't know, that once it was working again, there was a new motivation because they didn't necessarily know when and where they were going to get fed.
Yeah, actually,
the experiment was
just the opposite of what you said. They were doing the action, but they weren't getting rewarded for their efforts.
Oh, okay.
Because of the malfunction. And then the next day, it was fixed, and then the treats came, and they were like highly motivated to perform better than before. It improved their performance having that randomness introduced. Isn't that interesting?
Right. Yeah. And they're saying that actually, the example on that would be, you know, the example was one wife had mentioned that she really liked a dress that was in a window at a clothing store, and so the husband went out and bought her size and hung it in the closet just to surprise her, and so she wound up getting the dress that she wanted. So, you know, he's like, you know, be that, okay.
Well, it's interesting because what happens is when it's consistent and repetitive is that we become accustomed to it. So for me, I haven't had a car for almost a year. So every time I do have a car, I am so grateful. I never felt like that before. It was just assumed that I would have a car. And I also get a monthly source of income. And I have to remind myself that when this... it's the same amount every month at the same time, and I have to remind myself when I get that income to be grateful for it rather than to be like, yeah, that's right, there it is, that's what's supposed to happen. So it's across the board we do this.
So when you're driving now and you get to go places, isn't there even just a sense of like, wow, I can go to this place?
I'm so grateful.
Grateful even for the places, you know, there's this place that I can go check out. Yeah, it just has a different sense.
And it gets expansive. It's not just to have a car. It's It's like, oh, and that I can choose to go when I want, and that I can stay as long as I want, and that I can go to this cool place. I mean, it starts expanding out and out and out. So I think that can happen in the relationship too.
And that's one thing that he talked about. So, and then with that one, the next one was the he went ahead and added another list, which was the fun list. And the fun list
Yay!
Was really about, I know, right? Wake everybody up on that one. The fun list is activities and doing things fun together and jumping around and tickling one another and things like that, but also doing sports. And when it said that, it reminded me of my husband and I when we were dating. We played a lot of racquetball. And, boy, I haven't played racquetball in a long time. So there you go.
Okay, he said sports, but as long as there's no tension.
Right. You're doing
right?
it in a
playful
way. You
can only play sports if there's no tension. If you guys can play without getting, you know.
Competitive. Yeah.
Yeah.
Competitive. Yeah. It's just like me and bowling. No, I get competitive when I bowl. Don't know.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I'm a very competitive bowler. So we would be on teams together and we would be teammates, but I would compete against other people. I wouldn't compete against him.
Okay.
Because
he's
my teammate.
That would be fun. Because then you're
yeah.
on a team.
Yeah.
Then you're together.
Yeah. Working for,
but
yeah,
playing
working out, whatever.
And laughing. Playing
yes.
and laughing. Playing and
yeah.
laughing.
Yeah, they
exuberant
say you can do it.
Fun.
Exactly. You know, laughing 10 minutes a day. You know, that's,
he,
it doesn't sound like,
well,
I'm going to laugh 10 minutes a day. I'm like, yeah.
Well, he said what happened was that when he surveyed them, didn't he say that the average amount of time was 10 minutes per week that couples were playing and laughing together? 10 minutes a week was the average amount of time.
Nothing.
So he's saying you can't be, there's no way you can have a relationship that's full of vitality if you're not laughing and playing together.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
dull.
I totally agree. Yeah.
It's dead,
yeah. I mean, even if you're working hard and have lots of stuff going on, it's always good to have just breaks in your day when you're actually laughing and enjoy each other and just have something fun going on. You know, there's a whole research thing they're doing nowadays with the psychology of play and how they're really moving that into the work environment and how, you know, it's really helping with productivity and creativity and all different kinds of stuff. So that goes right along with everything else that we're really learning about, all that stuff. So, and then the last section I want to make sure we talk about is the fear of pleasure. And boy, that was very, very interesting for me, seeing the dynamics of you know, how we can be afraid of pleasure. And you're like, how is that possible? But it says it really gets into the resistance of that when we're young, and really help me with this, Michelle, that we wind up having pleasure when we're little, but little by little, our caregivers are in a place when it comes to the pleasure that we really buffer ourselves to the point where we consider ourselves wrong, or we have issues of self-esteem and things like that, and we make it wrong for us to seek pleasure in being not worthy or not deserving of something like that, depending on how our caregivers are treating us when it comes to senses of pleasure. And so after
yeah,
a while, we
get,
really negate that for ourselves. Yeah.
Yeah, we get conditioned.
Right.
By society and by our family against pleasure.
Yeah.
I mean, remember that first chapter where the lady was talking about her child taking off his clothes and being in the sunshine and having an erection and holding it? Do you remember that? Wasn't
mm-hmm.
that in this book?
Yeah, I think that was in the first chapter.
And,
uh-huh.
and most people are like, oh, no, he shouldn't be doing that. But he was just
right.
enjoying feeling the pleasure of all of it. And
uh-huh.
so that was quite amazing that she didn't do anything to take away his pleasure. But we do. We all get – because, first of all, we might stir up some repressed emotions in our parents.
Right. Well,
if as a child
we're
having – Right. Hello.
That's why I'm here. Let me repress that for you, Mom and Dad. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Right.
And what do they call it? They call all the kids are all the little Buddhas, the Buddhas for the family. You know, they're teaching us way, you know, all kinds of good lessons.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I thought was interesting with the fear of pleasure was there started talking about people who isolate, they're isolators. And boy, that was just such an interesting aspect of that, of somebody who's an isolator. And, you know, if we've gone back to our last show, we talked about, let's see, how do they call that? Where you're a refuser or an isolator. Yeah. So an isolator often has problems with this exercise of making lists because they want to cooperate, but they just can't think of anything that their partner can do for them. They don't seem to have any need or desires. What they're really going on behind the psychic shields, they're erecting as a child to protect themselves from overbearing parents. Discover early in life that one way to maintain a feeling of autonomy around their intrusive parents was to keep their thoughts and feelings to themselves. When they were deprived, and that way they deprived their parents of the valuable information. Their parents were less able to invade their space. After a while, many isolators do the ultimate disappearing act, and they hide their feelings from themselves. And in the end, it is safest not to know. And boy, I thought that was just really interesting about that. The struggles of how we, we do that in childhood and then take it into relationships with other people.
And then the isolator won't even know that they're doing that. They'll just be I can't think of anything.
Yeah, they're just basically like, I don't know, and I'm like, it's safe not to know. And then another example was, Marvel had talked to another guy that had done that too, where he was trying to give him the instructions to do the exercises, and he just couldn't wrap his mind around it because he just had this level of that he wasn't worthy of being able to make the list. Harville ended up rephrasing it in a way that wasn't about him and, making it about his partner, so she could basically have it where she could help herself to grow, and then he was able to understand it. So I thought that was really interesting, too, just these blocks that they wound up doing and just not allowing themselves to be able to say, this is something I like. This is something I would like you to do for that. Don't do that for me. So, it's really very interesting about making a positive list and having it fun and having it, surprising and all kinds of good stuff like that.
And just keep doing the exercises, even if you feel like anxious, just do it. Just do it, do it, do it, do it, do it. Because it helps the old brain to recognize a new way of being. Because the old brain really only recognizes habit.
Right.
It has
right.
a real hard time with something new coming in.
Mm-hmm. Really, one of the biggest things that's about this chapter is being able to introduce new ideas and concepts to basically be able to have those changes to make life better. And,
well, the interesting
like you said,
thing is, he says it's not just the ideas and concepts. It has to be married with the behavioral change. You can't do just the behavioral change. You can't do just the insight. You have to do them together.
Mhm. Yeah. Very interesting stuff. Well, I'm going to make my list. How about you?
Yeah, sure. Especially the fun list.
Make a surprise. There you go. So we thank
and
you
maybe
all for
I'll make
us.
A list. And maybe I'll make a list and just do them for myself.
You know what? That's a great idea. Who better to do that? It's going to be kind of hard to make a surprise list, though. But I mean,
well,
if you wrote it down, if you wrote it down, you put it in a jar or something, and you do it a couple months ago, and then you pull out a piece of paper, and you basically, you wouldn't know what it was, and you probably forgot what you wrote down. That would be a surprise. So there you go.
That's amazing.
So there are ways of being able to create that surprise list. That's all good.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Well, we want to thank everybody for joining us, and I just really love this book. Thank you, Michelle, for just thinking that would be really good for the book club, because it really is. So many great, so many insights, and yeah, this is just a really, really great book. So I want to thank our audience. So if there's any questions, comments, any ideas you guys are getting from all these our programs, we really would love to hear from you. And if you have any ideas for future shows, we'd love to hear from you guys. So thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.
All right, and we'll see you next time here at the cafe. Thanks for joining us.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the Transformation Cafe podcast. To learn more, visit transformation-cafe.com for show notes, guest information, and links to previous shows. You can also subscribe to the Transformation Cafe podcast on iTunes. Join us again next time at the Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul.